What's going on, Blue Jays fans, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Jays as part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your co-host, Lucas Weiss, and as always, thank you so much for making Locked On Blue Jays your first listen of the day. Of course, Locked On Jays is available and free on all platforms, including Spotify, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. Of course, you can follow my work on Twitter at Weiss Sports, as well as Sportsnet, ESPN's The Undefeated, and play-by-play broadcasting for Saga 960 AM Radio. The Toronto Blue Jays, they are not going to be qualifying to the 2021 MLB postseason. And to break that all down, the regular season that was, and a quick look ahead to the future, I'm once again joined by MLB analyst Jen Smith. Jen, welcome to the podcast once again.
Thank you. I wish we were here to discuss game 163, but we're not. So let's talk about what did happen today.
For sure. So, I mean, we can definitely go in a bunch of different directions. I think the first sort of thing to look at is obviously what happened on Sunday. I mean, because this was labeled as this, you know, crazy day, and rightfully so. I mean, for game 162 to have so much at stake, so much potential chaos at stake, what was truly exciting and highly anticipated coming in. The Blue Jays, of course, did their job. They dominated the Baltimore Orioles. They swept the bottom feeder of the AL East and one of the worst teams in baseball. But, of course, they didn't get the help that they need with the Rays and the Yankees, the Yankees being the Rays and then the Nationals being the Red Sox. Just what were your thoughts on just the day that was? Because now that it's a few hours in conclusion, it certainly was a day.
It certainly was. I thought that the Blue Jays entered this final series of the season knowing exactly what was at stake, right? And they had an opponent in front of them whom they could easily beat on paper, should absolutely sweep. And they took care of business, which is exactly what they needed to do. And you could see it from the players. You could see that tenacity right from the jump in every single game. They knew exactly what was on the line and what their job was. And they rose to the occasion. So that was fantastic. The unfortunate part, as we've said all along, was that they didn't control their own destiny. So, you know, there was a lot of scoreboard watching going on, and it was quite chaotic today, trying to split between the different games and follow along on Twitter, and different people would tweet different things, and you were trying to figure out what they were talking about depending on the context, you know. And fortunately, when you have to rely on, say, a team like Nationals beating a team like, you know, when you have to rely on these things, a team like the Nationals beating a team like the Red Sox, or, you know, the Yankees and the Rays, who took a scoreless game, you know, right into the late innings, it's out of your hands at that point. So, you know, I thought it was impressive the way that the Jays came out and, you know, absolutely beat up on an inferior team. But it was out of their control by the time they reached the weekend. And unfortunately, you know, the breaks just didn't fall their way.
Yeah. And look, I mean, the game certainly got out of hand in the Toronto Blue Jays' favor. I mean, heck of a start. You know, George Springer with a solo shot. I mean, to get the campaign started. And then it felt like just everyone was, you know, feasting today on the Baltimore Orioles. You know, Marcus Semien got, you know, a homer. Vlad did as well. Teoscar Hernandez got some RBIs. Santiago Espinal once again showed off. I mean, it was just a complete Blue Jays performance. And look, it's what they needed to do. Coming into this Sunday, I thought, Jen, that look, to me, the best chance was the Rays beating the Yankees. I think that, yes, to me, felt like the more likely option, even though Michael Wacha was on the mound. But then, you know, you look at the Yankees, you know, Taillon was on the mound going on their side. And look, a scoreless game going that late, it felt almost perfect for the Rays in some ways, that they could find a way to squeak it out. they had runners in scoring position in a couple of those innings where they just couldn't get past the really stingy Yankee bullpen. And when, of course, that Yankee bullpen did a really nice job on the Blue Jays and had just a great month of September. But it really felt like once Aaron Judge got that game, you know, that game-winning thing and brought the runner home, the RBI, and what was going on with the Nationals, because let's be honest, the Nationals were up. They were up 5-1. Yep. And it really felt like, okay, with the Blue Jays dominating the Nationals, a lot of Blue Jays fans were getting a little excited. I did not have that same faith in the Nationals, frankly, even though they were up 5-1. But it did feel good for a brief moment. But again, baseball, it never is over till it's over. And boy, it isn't even hockey season yet, Jen. And Boston is still breaking Toronto's heart.
Oh, there are many reasons why Toronto fans don't like Boston sports. Let's be honest. We could do an entire podcast episode on that alone, I'm sure. Like I said, I was trying to go between all of the games once it was clear that the Blue Jays had their game well in hand. I was flipping between the other two as much as I possibly could and following along on Twitter. You knew that it might be difficult with Michael Wacha taking the mound for the Rays to win that game, but he gave them five innings of scoreless baseball. So, you know, he kind of did what, you know, he had to do and what you would, wouldn't have necessarily expected from him. And you're right, you know, as a 0-0 game going into the late innings seems to set up well for a team like the Rays with their sneaky little ways out there. And it just wasn't meant to be. And you can take a look at it. You know, I mean, it doesn't impact the Rays season, clearly, whether they won or lost that game. But it obviously had, you know, playoff implications. Why do you pitch the Judge in that situation? You know, why don't you walk him? These are questions, right? And again, it didn't impact the Rays. So, you know, perhaps for them, it didn't really matter one way or the other. But when it does have an impact on the playoffs, and who gets in and, you know, how that all gets decided, you know, these are the questions you start to ask. With the Nationals, I don't know. I was actually feeling pretty good when they were up 5-1, knowing full well it could come crashing down at any moment against Boston. But I thought, you know, at 5-1, that's looking actually pretty favorable. And, it was not.
No, it certainly wasn't, because look, the Nationals to me, and look, we can do a whole podcast on just how that franchise, just except for that 2019 season where they finally got the monkey off the back to win the World Series. I mean, they've always seemed to disappoint their own fans and others too. But I think with that series, what frustrated me is the Nationals had so many opportunities. And let's just take Sunday's game. Bases loaded, where they could have just blown it even further out of the water, right? Like, I mean, a 5-1 lead, sure, that's a 4-run cushion. You would think in that situation that it's safe, the Nationals are going to do it. But it always felt like to me, and even in the Saturday game and the Sunday game, the Nationals had these opportunities to blow the game out of the water, to cash in big runs, and they just couldn't do it, which just left the door a little bit open for those Boston Red Sox hitters to come back. And boy, what an exclamation point for Rafael Devers. Objectively, one of the real great young players in baseball to get that 2-run homer in the top of the ninth.
Yeah, him for coming through in a big moment, right? I think Zimmerman came plate twice, bases loaded in today's game. And as you said, they failed to just absolutely put the nail in the coffin. So what can you say about that? You know, it was what I thought was really interesting was the starter that they threw out there today, making his debut. And, you know, 9 strikeouts over the course of 5 innings. You know, what a debut for that young man. And, you know, it certainly just, it wasn't enough because of the bullpen, you know, against that Red Sox lineup. And how weird was it, just as an aside, how strange was it to see, you know, Zimmerman being pulled from the game and saying his goodbyes, and Avila later, you know, I think in the next inning, same thing, you know, against the backdrop of all that was going on, right? It was what a strange vibe that all was.
Well, no doubt. It must have been just strange. I don't know, like, you know, as, you know, someone covering the Nationals or covering, you know, just baseball in general, because it almost seemed like a footnote. I mean, obviously for the Nationals mm-hmm. fans who have followed that team for years on years, their impacts are massive, but it just felt like a little bit of a forgotten piece there. Like, I mean, certainly people were talking about it and it was obviously a very moving, emotional moment, but it felt so, in the grand scheme of like Sunday game 162, it was like, okay, like this guy's retiring. Let's get back to the proceedings to try to figure out how this is all going to shake down.
Right. Exactly. That's what I meant. It was such strange vibes that they're saying goodbye to their fans and their city and their teammates. And meanwhile, there's this important game going on the field and, you know, they can't pull out a win, you know, with these goodbyes going on. And anyways, it was just such an insane Sunday. And, you know, from a Blue Jays perspective, you know, it's just unfortunate the way some of those balls fell today.
No doubt. The Toronto Blue Jays, they, as I said off the top, they are eliminated. They're not going to be participating in the 2021 postseason. They finished with a 91-71 record and a plus 183 run differential. We're going to talk about the 2021 season on a big picture level when we come back. But first, let me talk to you about DirecTV. I want to tell you about a simple way to get all the entertainment you love without the hassle. DirecTV Stream brings you live TV on demand, favorites together like never before, which means you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. And the best part, there's no annual contract. So stop waiting and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Hey, Jays fans, this is Lucas Sweets with an incredible app everyone who buys gas needs to know about, Get Upside. My listeners are making up to 25 cents for every gallon of gas every time they fill up. Just download the free Get Upside app in the App Store, Google Play right now. Use promo code BASEBALL and get a bonus 25 cents per gallon on your first fill up. That's up to 50 cents cash back. Don't pay full price at the pump anymore. Get cash back using Get Upside. Just download the app for free and use promo code BASEBALL. That's promo code BASEBALL. All right, welcome back to Locked On Jays. Lucas Weiss alongside with Jen Smith. Of course, thank you so much for making Locked On Blue Jays your first listen of the day. This podcast is free and can be found wherever you get your podcasts. So, Jen, Blue Jays don't make the playoffs. They do get 91 wins, but they finish fourth in the AL East. And I think, when looking at this, certainly like fresh, I know it's been a few hours since these proceedings ended as we're recording this on Sunday. Obviously, Blue Jays fans are, you know, a lot of them are disappointed. I mean, I think you want to try when you have an opportunity like this to get into a postseason position. But macro level, what do you take away from the 2021 MLB season for the Toronto Blue Jays?
On the positive side, there is a lot to take a look at. They put up, as you said, a plus 183 run differential. And for a good part of the season, that was without George Springer being in the lineup. So imagine where they might have been had he been healthy all season. You know, that includes downtime for Vlad and Teoscar Hernandez in terms of their offensive production. But, you know, they had four all-stars. They had four different players reach 100 RBIs this season. They have two potential award winners. I know, of course, Vlad is not going to win the MVP, but he did for the majority of the season put up MVP type numbers. Whether or not Robbie Ray wins the Cy Young, I think he will. But, you know, again, you know, he put up a certainly a worthy performance if he weren't to win. So there was a lot of things to really like about this team. I thought it was great, you know, really encouraging that the front office went, you know, pushed their chips in at the deadline, you know, got Berríos, wanted to fix that rotation and also have a piece, you know, for the rotation moving forward. They showed their faith in this team when they made that move. A lot of fans at that point were saying to either sell, which would have been absurd, yeah, or to just stand pat, which maybe could have been understood. And instead, this front office, you know, pushed it and went in on this season. And, you know, it didn't look good, but they put up this exciting final month. You know, at one point we never would have thought they would have gotten 91 wins, and yet here they are. And for them to not end up making the postseason is just crazy. And that's a whole other conversation in terms of division alignments and so forth, which is a whole other separate topic. But you would think that Major League Baseball would want its best teams to be represented in the postseason. So, you know, something to definitely worthy of discussion. And I thought there were some other really positive signs as well that came out from this season. You know, Danny Jansen, as we'd noted before, did not have a great offensive season, went on the IL and came back and was an absolute machine. And I think that's positive. If he can, you know, carry that into next season, then, you know, perhaps the Blue Jays have themselves a catcher that they were hoping they would have, you know, this offensive catcher, you know, who hit at every league of the minors. So I thought that was encouraging as well. And then, you know, obviously if Jose Ramirez becomes available, I would like the Jays to make a push, go after him. But if not, then, you know, Santiago Espinal certainly has made a case of being at the bare minimum a serviceable third baseman. So there's a lot of positive here is what I'm trying to say that can carry forward into next season. I thought I made a note actually, you know, somebody tweeted that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was watching the Boston Red Sox and Washington Nationals game from the dugout up on the big screen rather than going into the clubhouse. He actually sat in the dugout. And after that home run, he sat there for a few seconds and then just got up and went up the tunnel. And I think that I wrote down that would be fuel for him for next season, right? And sure enough, he said after the game that he personally was not satisfied and that this is only going to cause him to work even harder this offseason. We all know how much effort he put in last season to lose the weight and to get into shape. You know, he played all but one game this season. And I think to have come that close for this young core to have come that close and to have walked away disappointed, I think the experience of that, the adversity of having played in three different home stadiums, you know, that extra year of development, I think all of that bodes well for next year. So that is its one, you know, macro level piece if we're looking at moving forward. But I also think that this season exposed things that need to be addressed. Obviously, the bullpen being the key issue, right? So the weaknesses that got exposed, perhaps needing to diversify the lineup a little bit more so that when one player goes cold, the entire lineup doesn't go cold. At the bare minimum, you know, those areas of need have been clearly identified and the front office knows what it needs to do in this offseason.
Yeah. Great answer. Lot to unpack there. I think the first thing again that needs to be mentioned, and we've talked about it on this podcast, but it needs to be reiterated, is they didn't have a home for a lot of the season. I mean, they started in Dunedin, and that was a mad scramble to get that all figured out. They then moved to Buffalo, and then they came to Toronto finally at the end of July. Bo Bichette, I mean, talked about how, you know, hearing, you know, losing with fans cheering against you at home, this is his words, it sucked more than a May loss, which I found was a great quote, by the way. Yep. And I think, look, these players, managers, staff, personnel need to be applauded because what they were able to do in terms of playing baseball, staying united, staying focused on the task at hand, despite perhaps their minds being maybe in other places, the fact that they're on the road all the time, I think that needs to be applauded. And look, I know it is fresh and disappointing that the team didn't make the playoffs, but I think what they were able to do, there were so many moments, like we said, you know, on a previous episode where it really could have just fallen off. It could have completely fallen apart. And for them to get to a position where it was the last day of the season, determining whether they make the postseason, I think is truly impressive. And I think, again, they're going to remember this. I mean, you know, Bo Bichette, like he was pretty emotional. I mean, talking about Marcus Semien and what he meant to him and just what this whole season meant. So I know there's a lot of people who say, oh, these guys maybe don't care and all that, which I think is nonsense. I think the fact of the matter is these guys care so much. And this is such a grind of a sport, grind of a season, that they really want to get back here. And as you say, your words, they're going to use this as motivation to get better and be sustainable for years to come.
This is a group of guys who have had their, you know, obviously being professional athletes, you know, they want to win, right? But when you look at the young core and knowing that they've come up together, surround them with these veterans who have been there, done that, you know, Semien bet on himself, all those narratives going on, right? And, you know, they put up the statistic right at the beginning of the game. And so between Dunedin and Buffalo, their record was 22-22. Whereas including today's win, they were 25-11 at home in Toronto, right? And I don't think we can undervalue the psychological aspect of the game, how difficult it would be to be on the road. Essentially, your home games are on the road. You don't have your home fans cheering you on. You don't have that sort of momentum going for you when you come up to the plate. And, you know, who knows what the family situations are and just, you know, the everyday worries about COVID and the realities surrounding all of that. I don't think we can really underplay that just because these guys are well-paid professional athletes, you know, and clearly for them to have come back to Toronto and put on the show that they did, it clearly did make a difference. And, you know, they were that close. They were just that close. And, you know, I know some people will want to discuss, and we can when we end up actually breaking down the season, you know, the different games here or there that could have been won, should have been won, might have made the difference. But that's true of any team. And the adversity, I think, that they came through with, and they always had this positive attitude. That was another thing. You know, a lot of people didn't like necessarily seeing them being loose and having fun when they weren't winning. I think part of that was that psychological aspect of the game, was trying not to get pulled down or, you know, to dwell too much on it. They had confidence in their abilities. And, you know, ultimately we saw that play out on the field. Otherwise they wouldn't have been in this race.
No. And look, I mean, the fact of the matter is they finish September with a 22-9 record, the best in Major League Baseball for that month, which shows what this team can do if they can play that level for a full year. And George Springer, he actually made that point in his post-game availability on Sunday. He said, like, look, he said, quote, as a team, we know what we can do. We played great baseball all year, but we played our game the second half. We have to figure out how to be that team all year. And Jen, that's a very good point, because I know you mentioned how, look, games here, games there, look, they all matter. I mean, like, I know it's a long season, some matter more than others, but it's a collective. But mm-hmm. I do think, though, when you look back at the 2021 season, a point can be made about that those bullpen losses in the first half of the season really came back to haunt this team. And I'm not saying they got to win all those games, but even if they cut that in half, even if they, like, you know, they're in the postseason, right? And then in August, I mean, August is a big month. I mean, August, you know, it's after the deadline. You know, it's getting into that September month, final month of the season. You want to, you know, put yourself in a position. That's what the Jays did in 2015, if you can recall. They had that great month of August where they, you know, shot up the standings. And what happened was the bats didn't, you know, bats weren't clicking. And there were some critical mistakes. I mean, I think of Marcus Semien. I mean, again, Marcus Semien had a great year. But man, did, you know, that game really is magnified now when it's all said and done. If they win that game, we're in a game 163 on Monday. So I think, again, you're absolutely right. You know, you can definitely nitpick for all these teams, even the teams that didn't make the postseason and who were close. But I do think for the Blue Jays going forward, and this is all about development, is can they be this consistent team all year round? Because they're in the toughest division in baseball, and you cannot have a bad month, because you're going to have the Red Sox getting on you, you're going to have the Yankees, and you're going to have the Rays. That's the situation right now of the AL East. You have four thoroughbred franchises in that division.
Right. And look, there's no guarantee that Vlad will have an MVP type season next year, right? There's no guarantee that Marcus Semien will re-sign with this team, number one, and number two, have the same level of production that he had this season. There's no guarantees on any of this. But I do think that clearly the talent is there. And those early season losses where the bullpen blew it, those defensive miscues early in the season that may have cost them runs or cost them games, those are the things that obviously this front office will take a look at in the offseason and see where they need to make their improvements, right? They have a sole focus at this point, right? How do you get this team to the next level in this division?
Yeah, and we'll obviously get into that going forward. I mean, that's a, you know, a whole big discussion, because there's a lot of things, but I do want to focus on, I mean, you know, some of the stars of this season. I mean, you know, you look at someone like Vladimir Guerrero Jr., 48 home runs. Robbie Ray, 248 strikeouts on the season. I mean, you mentioned how, you know, all, you know, so many players getting, you know, over, I mean, 100 RBIs, and just, you know, Marcus Semien, just an incredible season as well. Because I think it all boils down to, I mean, I know for Ray and Semien, it was betting on themselves, right? They really wanted to, you know, put themselves in a position where they can really secure the bag in the offseason. But I also think for a guy like Vladdy too, we were waiting to see what Vlad could be. I mean, there was a lot of hype surrounding him when he came up to the big leagues. And even Bo Bichette, too, there was a lot of hype, given his connection with his dad, Dante. And I found that, especially for Vlad, but even Bo towards the end of the season, they've really shown that trajectory that, look, they're here now. They can be one of the best players in baseball. And I think that's very refreshing for Jays fans, especially during this moment where they don't qualify to the postseason, that, you know, none of those conversations anymore about Vlad potentially having to go back to the minors or something like that, right? Like, he's here to stay. He's going to be, you know, he's already, you know, a bona fide, you know, rising star on the path to superstardom. I do agree with your point, Jen, that again, not every year you're going to have the MVP like season, but I think there's room for improvement. And I think these guys just really love to win, and so glad that they're on this team right now. It's just going to be so exciting to watch them continue to grow.
Well, for years, Jays fans have been hearing about these two, particularly, you know, Vladdy. I remember the night that it was announced that they had, you know, reached an agreement with him when he was, you know, way off of anybody's radar. He was a 16-year-old kid, and the Jays had come to an agreement with him. And, you know, for a moment, you're like, wait, is that true? Is that accurate? Did that really happen? And we've been hearing about him and his offensive production for years. And when he came into the majors, let's be honest, it was a bit disappointing, right? We did not see that, you know, star power that we sort of all expected, and perhaps a little bit unfairly for, you know, a player new to the major leagues and major league pitching. And, you know, now we are seeing that potential that he truly has in him. And I think he has the potential to get even better. That's why I said off the top, you know, not that it's a good thing that the Jays did not make the postseason, but that disappointment that they feel, right, that dejectedness that he walked off the field with, I think will only fuel him this offseason to get into even better shape, you know, work on whatever it was that might have caused him to go into his slumps in the first place, right? Same thing with Bo. At first, defensively, there were some question marks surrounding him. You know, he has a tendency to swing out of his shoes and not be particularly patient at the plate. But we saw his development. We saw his defense get better. And you can, again, only assume moving forward that development will continue along that same pathway. Not every year will necessarily be MVP-type numbers. But I think as overall well-rounded baseball players, they will improve.
No doubt. We're going to continue to talk about this season. But first, I want to talk to you all about Built Bar. Did you know that Built Bar has so many delicious flavors? There is something for everyone. When you talk to a Built Bar fan, they definitely are passionate about their faves. I know for me, raspberry, mint brownie, double chocolate, strawberry come to mind. Not only are Built Bar flavors the best tasting, but they're healthy too. 17 to 18 grams of protein, calories range from 130 to 180, only 4 to 5 grams of sugar, and only 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Order today and get the grasshopper cookie or raspberry or whatever you like. Go to built.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 15% off your order. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for 15% off at built.com. All right, we're back on Locked On Blue Jays. Lucas Weiss, Jen Smith. Again, to all of those listeners, thank you so much for making Locked On Blue Jays your first listen of the day. You can get this podcast anywhere you get your podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts. Charlie Montoyo, Jen.
Thank you.
I want to go to him next because I think he is part of what we've been talking about. Bringing the team together, being that person in the clubhouse. And I know that he's definitely polarizing. I think he is going to stay as Blue Jays manager for now. I mean, I don't think there's any case in my mind why management would let him go. But I do think, though, that now there's expectations. And now with this ball club that, as we move forward, I think this year has certainly ramped up the expectations, and that's for everyone, including Charlie Montoyo. But I do think, look, we're not there every day, and we don't necessarily see behind the curtain what he's like. But I think it's clear to me, look, to do what these players have done the three different cities, and for him to just be that, just that positive, optimistic influence, I think, look, it must have helped. And I think, it, you know, you have to give him some credit for being able to still steer that ship. Obviously, the players are out there playing and they're doing all that great stuff. But yeah, I think he was pretty impactful too as the season went along.
There are many different management styles. And I think in sports where fans get passionate, they get angry, they get excited, they get upset, I think they want to see that reflected on the field. And you're simply not going to get that with Charlie Montoyo. And I think that that is one source of frustration. And I know I've said it. I've said it on Twitter and I said it previously on this podcast. There were times when I wanted to see Charlie Montoyo go full John Gibbons and get himself tossed out of a game on behalf of whatever nonsense was going on with an umpire, right? That is simply not in his nature. And, you know, that's fine. That's how he leads. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know, if just because it doesn't match sort of the expectations or, you know, what we want to see in a manager. I think, as you said, we don't see what goes on behind closed doors. I interacted with him a little bit. I have a little bit of a sense of what he's like. You know, unless the players come out and say that they don't have faith in him as a manager or that they don't think he has their back or whatever the case might be, then there really is probably no reason for this front office to get rid of him. We can talk about his tactical decisions and his, you know, bullpen management and so forth, and we can dissect that to the nth degree. The truth is that managers make questionable decisions, right? And, you know, probably the average fan doesn't pay attention enough to what's going on in other games with other teams on a day-to-day basis to know how many questionable decisions are being made all of the time, right? So, yeah, I agree with you. I've said it before. I've said it to people, you know, constantly tweeting, you know, fire Charlie Montoyo. I don't think he's going anywhere next season. I really don't. Now, if the team gets off to a horrendous start and they're grossly underperforming, you know, perhaps he's out the door, right? So there is that caveat, of course. But I don't see why, after, you know, steering this team through, you know, COVID and different home stadiums and possibly being part of keeping this team loose and keeping this team going, I don't see why you would get rid of him. And I know that's not going to make some fans happy, but that's where I think we're at.
Yeah. And I think the front office has faith in him for now. I think, look, and this is a more of a baseball wide thing. I think there's, you know, the analytics, the, you know, the quote unquote computer, if you will, those things are making more of the decision. That's driving the decision making now. And look, I'm not trying to diminish the importance of a manager. A manager is very important. But I think that people need to understand that, look, maybe some of these decisions, quote unquote, were analytically driven, right? In terms of lineups and things like, and pitching decisions and things like that.
But 100%.
Yeah, like 100%. Like it really is, like that's the reality, right? But I do agree with you. And we just saw with potentially the San Diego Padres. Now, as we're recording this, it's not official yet. But the rumor is Jace Tingler, their Padres manager, is gone. And this was a Padres team with a lot of hype, a lot of expectations. So I do think that, again, I'm not saying that it's a hot seat for Charlie Montoyo. I think, look, he came in, Atkins and Shapiro's quote-unquote guy, right? Like that was their guy when they came in. It was, obviously a rebuilding first year. The rebuild is obviously accelerated, but it is a results-driven business. And I do think that, look, the 60-game season, that was, it was 60 games, right? I mean, I know that in the history books, they'll be counted as a postseason appearance, but it was only 60 games. I think, again, you know, again, the context is so important, but what they were able to do this season with navigating through the pandemic in the cities, I think everyone has to get credit. But now with a full 162, the team is going to look different next year, no doubt. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, like, I think, again, I'm not saying it's a full hot seat, but I do think it's going to be interesting to see how he does, especially when the games get more important, because that's for the players and for the manager. That's where their legacies are determined.
Absolutely. And, you know, he did manage with some urgency today. If you looked at some of the bullpen options that he ended up going to, and, you know, for some that was great, and others thought he could have maybe toned it down a little bit and saved something for tomorrow. And, you know, sometimes there just really is no winning, right? We don't live in an alternate universe where, you know, every wrong decision, if a different decision was made, turns out right. We don't live in that. So, you know, it's hard to really determine how many of his decisions, you know, sure, we know which ones were the most questionable. And it's hard to determine why those decisions were made, what the numbers showed, you know, what his analytics department told him at the time made the most sense. And, you know, what exactly can you lay at his feet versus what can you lay at the player's feet who did not perform in those situations? So, you know, I think having gotten through this season and the adversity that they faced, getting to the 91 wins, having some of these stellar performances, as you said, there's going to be greater expectations next year because now they've kind of been there and done that, right? Let's be honest, this was like playing playoff baseball, even though it wasn't, right? So they've had that pressure on them now for weeks to float there and to perform. So I think next season, you know, if they get off to a really poor start and things start to unravel a little bit, then absolutely he's on the hot seat. And I don't think it would take much at that point, perhaps, to replace him. But I think he's earned the right to start the season next year, right?
No doubt.
That I think he has done.
No doubt. And look, I mean, you know, social media isn't dictating these decisions. I mean, no. As much as Montoya likes to trend, and look, as we're recording this, what's trending right now, Brad Hand, Rafael Dolis, Tyler Chatwood. And again, it goes back to our point that, like, look, I know that was so early in the season, but again, those games add up in the grand scheme of things, right? And look, those expectations mean that they need to get wins. And like I said earlier, I mean, they're not switching divisions soon. They're not going to the AL West or the AL Central. They're staying in a very stacked division where these teams like the Rays and the Yankees and the Red Sox, they aren't going anywhere. So, I mean, you need to really play at a high level for the full season. I do want to talk, though, about what a lot of the players were saying in their post game about Robbie Ray, Marcus Semien. Bo Bichette obviously had a lot of high praise for Semien, saying, you know, he's been, you know, treated him everything like a player. I mean, just, you know, he means everything to me. George Springer was very public in saying that he'd like both of them back. But Semien did give that little if I come back here. And obviously, I mean, that's, you know, prudent on his part, right? He's not going to, you know, drop a news bomb much to, you know, our hopes that he would, you know, give us a little bit of truth serum, you know, after a tough loss and after a long season. But it is interesting, though, that the players obviously are aware of this, and this is the number one, to me, off-season topic for this team. And we'll obviously get into more in future episodes, but I just think it's really interesting that the players are, you know, were very positive and very supportive of Ray and Semien. And I really do think front office and management have to try to do everything they can. And I know that they're going to have a lot of offers, and I have a lot of respect for players when it comes to being quote unquote free agents that they have to choose for a bunch of different factors, what works for them financially, for the family, all that. They've deserved to be in that position. But I do think now that management should at least try to make a vested effort, because I think if you can bring these two guys back, look, like, why not, right? The team that, you know, we've seen what this team can do, and those two are really quality guys.
Absolutely. They brought so much to this team this year, just in terms of, you know, experience. And I believe Bo Bichette, I believe his exact quote was that Marcus Semien has meant the world to him this season. And I'm sure he means that in numerous ways, including just his own development as a player. And whenever players say something on the records media, they know obviously front office is going to hear it. And it's, you know, a little bit of a message, you know, spend the money, keep improving this team. These were two key guys to this season. Where would the team have been without those Robbie Ray starts, for example, right? And so, you know, that's just a little message to front office. These guys were important. They brought a lot to this team. We would not have been in this position if it weren't for these two guys. And you need to do what you can to bring them back. And that's not just to the front office. That's obviously to ownership as well, who, you know, determines the payroll. So I do think that they are going to want, obviously, to test free agency. They've absolutely earned that right. I'm truly hoping that they have enough faith in the Blue Jays organization and whatever development they've had here, because again, Robbie Ray has improved vastly with Pete Walker as his pitching coach. Marcus Semien signed here on a one-year deal, hoping to gain some value, which he more than did. And so hopefully the two of them at the bare minimum give the Blue Jays an opportunity to match any offers that they receive in this free agency.
Yeah, and look, we always know with the Jays, they may have to go a little bit extra with the year, a little bit extra on the dollar value. I think, look, this front office, I know maybe when they first started, they got criticized a lot for maybe their personality and maybe it's maybe not the moves that they made and all that. But you can't deny the money that they paid Hyunjin Ryu. You can't deny the money that they paid George Springer, giving Ray Semien opportunity. So I really do believe them at their word that they really, you know, that they're all in on this team right now, that they really want to win, and they want to win now with this young core. I think the one thing I will say with the extra year is, you know, and this is where they have to decide, right? Like, are there better options out there available yes. in the market? And, you know, was this just a one-off, right? Like, it's very difficult to evaluate, but like, was Robbie Ray, I mean, he's only a two-pitch guy, right? Like, is that going to be a problem going forward, you know, at years 3 and 4, right? Or Marcus Semien, right? But look, I think they've certainly earned the right, like you say, to go test the market, to go test the waters. But look, this is, you know, again, this is a special young core of guys where every opportunity now, every year that goes by, you're trying to get to not only the postseason, but to win it all. And you got to try to put yourself in a position to do that year in, year out, especially, you know, we haven't even gotten yet to the years where, you know, Vlad's going to need to negotiate a contract, Bo will, and all that. So these are the glory days to try to find yes. a way to get, you know, your team to the postseason and to have postseason success.
Well, and that's the key thing here, right? That's the key difference between this team and the 2015 team, right? The 2015 team, 2016, that window was closing. We all knew it. It was extremely exciting. Anthopoulos went all in. Now we know in hindsight, you know, he wasn't sticking around. So, you know, hey, let's go.
Yeah.
And right. And that was exciting. That was exactly what fans absolutely wanted. This front office has built what they think will be a sustainable winner, where the window right now has sort of just opened. And that's obviously the key difference. And I'm not the first person to say that, right? It's obvious, but that difference, that sort of difference in approach to building a winning team. So you're right. Those decisions as far as who to add now, and if they have to give, you know, extra years to these players, knowing that that last year of the contract may not be a particularly good one on paper, you know, what is the trade-off for that for the next, say, 2-3 years, right? Do they think it's enough to put them over the top? So I think it'll be an extremely interesting offseason. Really interesting. I think there will be at least one move this offseason that's going to make people go, whoa, wow. You know, and I look forward to that day and to us talking about it.
No doubt. And the last thing I'll say before we have to wrap it up, I mean, the fans, I think, here seeing Rogers Center, even though it was limited capacity, but seeing them come back, seeing them interact on social media, this has the potential to really capture Toronto and Canada sports for many years. And I think it is really special. And I think what we've seen what this team can do, and it's just the beginning. And again, I know Blue Jays fans right now, it is disappointing, rightfully so. Like, I think it'd be so cool to talk about the postseason, because I think this team was a lot of fun this year. There were so many cool moments. And I honestly think that it is crushing just given what they accomplished on the field and that the fact that they still didn't make the postseason. But that's baseball. I mean, like, that's what it is. It should be a challenge to get to the postseason. But I think that these fans now have gotten a little taste. And I think, man, I mean, hopefully by 2022, it's full capacity starting April 2022. And it's just going to be very exciting to see. And I think the front office knows that. And we know that when the Jays are competitive, they're going to fill up Rogers Center. They're going to buy tickets. And that makes an exciting time for baseball in this country.
Toronto fans are exceptional sports fans. They love their teams. They are passionate. They support their team, and I know the Jays are, you know, Canada's team, and across the country they get that support. I'm just talking Toronto in terms of being able to say go to a game on a regular basis. You know, they increase the capacity to 30,000. They fill that stadium to capacity. This is while a pandemic is still going on. And not everybody is necessarily feeling comfortable to venture out into, you know, a crowd like that. I think if the capacity had been increased even further, I think they still would have sold out that stadium. You know, these fans have, you know, genuinely supported this team. This is a fun team. This is a talented team. And, you know, it really is, it is so disappointing on so many levels that we are sitting here after game 162 and they are not playing tomorrow, right? It is very disappointing on so many different levels, and fans are definitely going to need to grieve that for a while, as are the players. But I think looking forward to the future, I think there's a lot here to look forward to.
No doubt. And another thing to look forward to is more episodes of Locked On Blue Jays that you and I will do together, Jen, because probably this week at some point we are going to hear the exit interviews, which are always, I think, interesting. They don't reveal everything when you hear from Ross Atkins, Mark Shapiro, and some of the players, and maybe Charlie Montoyo as well, but they give you a little foreshadow of what this offseason is going to be. And this offseason is going to be interesting. There's also going to be there's definitely going to be a labor negotiation. Not as interesting, but obviously a lot of implications. Hopefully baseball will start on time in April 2022. But that's why I think for all baseball fans, even though you're not maybe tuning into you know, the Blue Jays anymore. I mean, the MLB postseason is still going on. So if you do like baseball objectively, you know, definitely watch October, because you may not be watching baseball for a few months. But anyway, Jen, where can people find you on Twitter? Because you are a great follow, and I recommend all the listeners to follow Jen Smith, because always brings the fire tweets and baseball insight.
Thank you. I appreciate it. People can follow me at baseball_Jen, and that's Jen with two N's.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, listeners, for making Locked On Blue Jays your first listen every day. Like I said, our next episode will probably come this week after locker cleanouts, exit interviews. We'll break down that stuff and then dig a little deeper into the offseason, because there's so many different interesting angles. Of course, Marcus Semien and Robbie Ray are going to definitely capture that, but there's definitely others that we're definitely going to talk about as well. But make your second listen to Locked On MLB. Paul Francis Sullivan, please call him Sully, brings you his unique perspective on the major leagues, past and present. It's available and free on all platforms. Locked On Blue Jays is available as well on all platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher. Again, I know we would have liked to have hosted more shows through the postseason, but we are going to be back. There's going to be a busy offseason ahead, and we are very excited to do so. So for MLB analyst Jen Smith, I'm Lucas Weitz. You've been listening to Locked On Blue Jays. Have yourselves a wonderful night.